And then is to ask, that, well, I've heard that some of the research that's being done or being attempted in relation to whales and dolphins as conscious beings is made more difficult because of the difference in brain structure between dolphins and human beings, to say nothing of other differences such as the fact that a lot of the sounds that they make we can't hear and things of that sort.
I think they're smarter than we are.
They do. And I was wondering if the people, the researchers that you are working with, adventurers, is that the phrase?
I have no direct information regarding that. We haven't been in touch with any people recently who were working with dolphins and or whales in that area. The last one was John Lilly, and I haven't talked with John for 5 years, so I don't know what he's been doing.
Larry, I can tell you what, next week, Dr. Patrick Flanagan will be our guest, and Patrick is the one that taught the dolphins to do the things for the Navy that they do.
So he can
answer some of those questions.
Yeah, that's just fascinating.
All right?
Okay, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining us, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis was squealing at us pretty loudly there. Shall we try again? Have Dennis turn off his radio there, if he would.
That's what it is.
Sounds to me. Okay. Dennis is not going to do it. So we'll go to James. You're doing the same thing. It's in our system. Wasn't Dennis's fault or it wasn't James's fault. So while we correct our system, we'll just continue going on with the wild and wonderful world that the explorers are finding out. One of the explorers ran across a very interesting lady who was trying to show her a rather large building. What was the outcome of that? I didn't get a chance to finish that story.
Oh, well, I don't think I included it in Far Journeys. The interesting part of the sequel to that, where this lady, female, I'll put it that way, a very attractive female, lured our physicist and lured is not quite the word, but he encountered her, and she took him to show him around in her part of a non-physical or another universe system, and then handed him off, as it were, to another person who was a male, and there the conversation developed finally after much several encounters. Final part of the encounter was quite interesting after expressing having great difficulty in learning their technology or beginning to even that it was finally discovered that our physicist, being a male, was deliberately lured there by the female because they got the signal that that's the only way they could get him there, was luring there by a female.
Really?
Which we thought was a lot of fun.
Did he learn anything?
With great difficulty, however, that particular system agreed that they would attempt to teach him the fundamentals of their technology or their sciences. But became an excruciatingly difficult process and encompassed so much time that we were unable to get it down to any degree of commonality, I guess the best word is.
Just beyond his
scope. Beyond his, and he was, and was, and is a tremendously talented person intellectually, and he still could not get a satisfactory base on which he could understand it.
Well, maybe we have cleared up our system here. We'll try talking to James. James, are you there?
Yes, I am.
All right.
Is this clear enough for you?
Well, now it seems to be working.
Okay. Mr. Monroe and Mr. Jenkins. First of all, keeping in mind that the name of the show is Open Mind, let me tell you what makes a skeptic, and then let me tell you why I'm skeptical about out-of-body. About 18 months ago, you talked about free energy devices, and you said that within a year we'd have them and we could unhook our energy supplies from utilities. You talked about crystals, and I went out and I got a crystal and I put it in my refrigerator. All I have is a cold crystal. You talked about firewalking, and Subsequently, I saw a demonstration by people who were totally untrained, and they just demonstrated that it's possible to do this. There's nothing mysterious about it. And now I hear Mr. Monroe talking about out of body, and he talks about going to other planets and going back in time and forward in time. If this is really possible, why not do a demonstration in real time? I mean, why doesn't he have one of his explorers come to your studio and, you know, describe things or do, you know, make some kind of concrete demonstration? All I hear is...
That indeed was what we were planning on doing, but we were not able to do it.
Well, all I hear is abstractions. And I think if you want... I mean, I may be a skeptic, but I think if you want to convince anybody that any of this is possible, why are all of these feats that can't be... there's no evidence for done. Why can't we do something more concrete?
That's a very interesting question. I can give you a very immediate and very early response as far as we're concerned. We're not in the process of proving it to the world at large, and that may be selfish because we're simply... basically finding out for our own edification. We get pushed into corners now and then to say, well, what are you doing? But that's not our stance, is to make a massive public demonstration of it. There are others who might want to do this, but this hasn't been our role. That's the fastest and easiest answer. So we are not attempting to really prove it to anyone else. We can give the tools say that these tools are available for an individual to find out for himself if he so wishes. But massive, and I say Bill Jenkins is, I consider, a friend, and we get on and chat in here, but it is not to prove the validity or the non-validity of the out-of-body state. There are studies that have gone ahead and have indicated, for example, that on a worldwide base, some 25% of the world population has had at least one spontaneous out-of-body experience they can remember.
But how do we know these aren't just hallucinations or dreams? I mean,
well,
if you could give some concrete evidence to people,
the question always is what would you consider concrete evidence? You see.
Well, for example, if it is possible to move out of the body and cross state lines. At the speed of light, which it must be possible to go to other planets and come back in a lifetime,
yes.
Why not have somebody go from Louisiana to Los Angeles and describe things in a room?
We have done that. We have done that any number of times.
Well...
we've done better than that, but as a matter of fact...
Then why don't we talk about that? Because you're talking about a lot of abstractions about things that people really can't relate with, about winking elephants and...
Well, you see, we've gotten to that stage in our talk.
Right. I'd like to hear some of the concrete things that have been done that can be documented.
Well, it depends on what you mean by documentation. If you say, you see, there is many conflicting things. For example, one can be a remote viewer, as it were, which is a current phrase for, let's say, clairvoyance in the old-fashioned way. And a remote viewer can from a distance, perceive activities at a given site or a given target location, and can report very accurately what the activities there or what is there at that location. But that's not the out-of-body state. The criteria for, let's call it, proof is very difficult because you're dealing with something that which you have no way of measuring, and that's one of the great problems, too.
Am I incorrect in my supposition that an out-of-body state can be in real time, that someone could leave their body and go to a location that's maybe 30 or 40 or 200 miles away and come back and report things?
Oh, very much so, yes. We did much of that 15 years ago, let's say. 10 to 15 years ago, we did a lot of that type of work. We have not done it recently.
Bill, do you understand what I'm talking about?
I hear what you're doing. Hear what you're saying, and you know Bob's being rather specific. They have done that. They have done that over and over again, and they have moved on to other realms of investigating this particular phenomenon, which has a great deal more impact. upon what we're going to learn other than just playing with it and saying, here, I'm going to run over to Arizona at some place in Phoenix, tell you what's happening, come back, and look what I've done. Of what great value is that?
Well, he says, though, that he doesn't want to, I mean, he doesn't see any point in grandstanding and showing this to the public in general. But if this is truly a valid, useful thing for people to do, I would think that that would be probably one of the first steps he would want to take is get the public.
He did 15 years ago.
We did this, and we are looking for exactly what you're speaking of, something of value. There, we could not perceive any great value in going from Virginia to Los Angeles or San Francisco to go and read some numbers in a room, for example, or observe what's taking place there. How many times do you have to do this before you are satisfied to the accuracy of something like that? What do you do beyond that where it becomes something of value, something that will perform
It would be tremendous. I mean, you could do away with telephones for one thing.
Well,
I know he did it 15 years ago.
But, okay, then why are we talking on the telephone? I mean,
because it's not that easy to do. For example, the best parallel I can give you is that to become a very accomplished violinist, for example, it takes years of practice. If you're going to be a gymnast, it takes years of exercise, practice, and study to do these kinds of things. Most people are unwilling to do that, very frankly. But if one is willing to do that, and I will not back away from that statement, if one is willing to dedicate so many hours each day for about 2 years, they could become tremendously proficient in this field.
Well, I still remain a skeptic. And
no, sir, this is the answer to a skeptic. If indeed you are willing to do that.
Well, I think before you can get someone who's a skeptic to donate 2 years of his life, you have to do something a little bit more concrete than what I hear.
Well,
you know, I hear something happened 15 years ago, but I mean.
What's the difference in it happening 15 years ago or 10 minutes ago?
If there was some demonstration to me that it happened, I mean, rather than saying that it happened, that's the difference.
Tools, the methods of doing that in a very simple demonstration are available to you through a number of different ways. If you are interested enough to take the time to do something like that, those systems, those methods are available.
Yeah, they have the gateway programs that are conducted here in Los Angeles quite often.
But you see, you don't even need to do that. There are other ways of doing it, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And people say, well, this is very good and a very valid point. Prove it to me. Why? Let them prove it to themselves, and that's the only way you can do it.
Well, Mr. Monroe, I'm not trying to be critical of you. I'm just trying to. I'm sure there are a lot of people who feel the way I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's probably some frustration in listening to the conversation because it seems to be a lot of abstractions. And
you know how I can empathize with that? If you had asked me 25 years ago, I would have had exactly the same position that you have. In other words, my position 25 years ago would be precisely what you're saying. Without any.
What was it to convince you to donate so much of your life to this? I mean, who opened your eyes, or what demonstration, or what happened?
Well, what happened in a very simple form, all the way back in 1958, this started happening with me. And in it was a thing that I had to do something about it, because it was sort of a wild talent developing in a very ordinary life. And not finding any other answers, I had to go in turn and set out some type of form of research to see what could be what this is. And it took me at least a full year to accept the reality of it. And that was, let's say, at least 100 such episodes in 1 year. And during that whole year, my skepticism was exactly where yours is.
Well.
And I could not accept it until the very thing that you talk about took place, namely that I encountered means of being able to prove it. And once I did that, or that took place is a better word, that changed me completely, as it would you. That proved it.
I'll call back when I experience this.
Well, or find out a way to do it.
Or find out a way to do it. But I'm not at the point where I want to donate 2 years of my life.
If you find out a way, James, let me know, because I have been able to do it myself.
I empathize with you, Bill.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, thank you very much.
Bye.
There's something very healthy about skepticism all along.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, absolutely. This is a vital part of what? Skepticism. Open skepticism.
Well, they certainly, the skeptics enjoy this show because we give them a lot of fodder to think about.
Sure you do.
Okay. Let's go to Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hello.
Uh-huh.
Yes. I somewhat can empathize with that young man, except for the fact that everyone who I've met and everyone who I've heard on your show, Bill, has said over and over again that the awareness that you need for true perception in all of these areas takes time to develop. And I think Mr. Monroe was also speaking about that. And I myself am a student of metaphysics, and I'm, you know, a relative beginner, although I've been at it for a couple of years now. And I have a question regarding the out-of-body experience. I, of course, was delighted when reading in Shirley MacLaine's Out on a Limb about her experience in the spring in the high mountains of Peru. And I myself have not had any physical environment even close to that, but I'm wondering if an out-of-body experience, does it need to be stimulated physically by an environment that is not your ordinary environment? For instance, would an isolation tank be a way to experience an out-of-body as experiments have been done in all over the world with isolation tanks, and of course the graphic commercial revelation about it, of course, was in Altered States. I mean, a fictionalized account, and maybe not so fictionalized. But is that one way to go, or is that totally unnecessary to have like a physical stimulation to go out of body?
The first and foremost clue and an isolation environment does help that is to shut off your physical sensory input as much as you can. Begins to isolate you to the point where you recognize, one, I'm awake and I'm conscious without this heavy input from the five physical senses. This is a landmark, a milestone that you pass where you realize you don't need this sensory input to be conscious, and whatever will help do that. And we do indeed use an isolation booth in our laboratory. We have different types of non-stimulants and stimulating environments that we use within it. But the prime one is that we do shut off sight and sound and the sense of touch as much as possible. So
you use a Faraday cage also, don't you?
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. And we do shut off a lot of the EM radiation that may well be reaching the ordinary human. But any type of sensory deprivation can indeed help, but you have to get acclimated to that.
From your experiments with your explorers, have you found out that if that is the starting point, that after a while these people are able to go into a meditation or whatever it takes and do it without the in other words, can you acclimate yourself so that you can go out of body without the sensory deprivation?
Oh, yes. We have a tool that we've been using for a good 10 years now, which is a sound-inducing system that we call a hemisync, which is a synchronization of the brain hemispheres. But that is a learning thing that one learns much like biofeedback, so that they can, a participant can recreate that state. No matter what his environment, whether it's outside of the isolation booth and outside of what we call our check units, which is a controlled ballistic environmental chamber,
mm-hmm.
And can do it, again, as it were, even in an airport, sitting in a chair in an airport. And that, though, is a matter of training, very, very similar to how one learns to alter your physical mechanism by, say, biofeedback. It's a learned procedure. And once having learned it, you don't need this the training wheels, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Either the methods that we use or the isolation.
Are some of these methods that you're describing designated in your new book?
Yes, very much, to a very definite degree. Some of the most important parts of it are related in the book.
Terrific. Well, I'm looking forward to that.
All right. You'll find a lot of fun in it.
I had one other question. I have a very good memory. Not that I have trained myself to use it. I should qualify that. I have a memory. My memory to go back into the past is very good. I'm very bad with names and that kind of thing. But as far as my own life goes, I can go back, and I can go back to when I was a year old and even younger than that, to very specific days and times of that period of my life. I can recall, goodness, I can recall the smell of our yard and the smell of my dog, for instance. The olfactory sense was so vivid. The smell of our house. We lived in a flat, and my grandmother lived downstairs, and we lived upstairs, and each house had its own. Anyway, I'm wondering that, with that kind of a memory...
You have a very great opportunity, and you ought to use it.
I was just going to ask you that. Is that going to be a help to get back, to go back, in other words, either into a past life regression and or an out-of-body experience?
All right. There are two ways you can use that recall system. One, follow the path you've already started, and that is deliberately keep working backwards till you get down to your actual physical birth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can go back to 1 year and under, then you should be able to do this. And do it very deliberately. And then go back into a pre-birth state and see what happens.
Right.
I assure you, if you have that kind of recall control, you won't get in any trouble or anything like that. It'll be a very fascinating thing.
And you can't take a notepad with you, so it's good to have the memory.
Are the two related? I mean, is there a relationship between going out of body and going into a regressive state?
Not necessarily, no. But
okay.
It all is a system of memory. For example, we take the position right now that you, meaning all of us, go out of body during sleep at night. Or a number of reasons that are not all totally apparent at the moment. So if you got that kind of memory, all you have to do is to begin to remember what you do in deep delta sleep, your deepest sleep at night. And if you remember that, you'll remember the out-of-body state.
And is that something that can be helped by this, what you mentioned about going in an hour and 20 minutes with an alarm to remember? Because that is something I don't do very well is remember my dreams.
The alarm system can work very well that way. Only if you want to really find the out of body state instead of dreams. I was talking dreams.
Oh, that was dreams, right?
That was dreams, but you can do the same thing with an alarm system. Simple, and try to make it as gentle as you can.
I have an alarm system that's about to go off here, gentlemen.
Well, thank you so much.
Right.
I'm looking forward to your book.
All right, Jim.
Right in the middle of your sleep.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your call, Jim. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Bob. Leona.
Fiona.
Fiona. How are you, Fiona?
I'm fine. First of all, I love your programs, Bill.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say for the healthy skeptic about the crystal, I wonder if he got a cluster of crystals put in his refrigerator or just a plain crystal, because it makes a difference.
I don't know. I have one about the size of my thumb in mine. And
well, I was told that you have to use the clusters, not just the... just the one crystal, and I was told that by the crystal people in the valley.
Yeah, okay.
So, just to let him know.
All right. What's on your mind, huh?
No, nothing, really. I just heard him talking, and that was about it.
Oh, that's it.
I just listen happily to everything that you have on.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate that.
Okay.
Okay, Florence, you're on.
Hello, Bill. This is very interesting. Have you gotten into healing with your work?
In the out-of-body state?
Yes. Have any of your people... I have experiences such as this and was taken into a vast area of light, and it seems to be extremely healing. I bring it into my body. And, I have kind of quantum leaps, and then I get scared, and I have to wait and let my intellect catch up.
I don't know. What have you found about healing of the explorers, Bob?
Well, that's very interesting. The kind of scary thing is the most important part that you, and that is the inhibitor. All I can say is that ordinarily, and I say that I cannot think of an exception. Our explorers, quote, make friends with a non-physical being. I'll put that word in front of
it. Oh, yeah. I've seen them.
And the prime rule or basis of that association is the well-being of the explorer. And they do indeed perform various functions to help that explorer be healthy, and including healing and some very spectacular things.
Yeah, like a guide. And
Yes, but their association does produce some most, most spectacular healing processes.
Let's pick that up, Bob, whenever we get back. There's our music. We're going to take a break for explorers, those who are working under laboratory conditions there, very controlled situations. When they run into other entities on the other side, there's quite a great deal of concern about their well-being, and that there has been some healing done with them in the out-of-body state that's translated them into their physical life. Is that what you were saying?
Yes. I need to qualify and say that not on just a very casual contact, but where such communication or, I say, association, whatever you want to call it, is on an ongoing basis. The prime concern of that non-physical being is the health and, I would say, happiness, too, of that particular explorer.
Mm-hmm.
This translates itself into very practical solutions, as it were, for any dysfunction of that that human explorer, to the point of utilizing and we neglected it for a long time, a very astounding technology in such healing procedures. And when we were so dazzled by the information that we received that we neglected that thing and the results or evidence supporting it for so long a time. But some very basic things where one of our explorers, for example, had very specific diagnosis for an illness that required hospitalization or surgery. And they would be treated, as it were, by their friendly non-physical being and then no longer required it. And the physiological data supported that that healing or that lack of a need for treatment. Most fascinating that this has occurred at least 8 or 9 times during the last 5 or 6 years.
So a healing process would be undertaken in the out-of-body state.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And that would be translated when they got back in-body.
That, yes. Mm-hmm.
That that had great impact upon the physical body.
Or in other specific cases where this treatment would take place while they were upon the body, while our explorer was not in the body, very deliberately taken out so the treatment could take place.
That is fascinating. Maybe one of these days in the not-too-distant future, Bob, the hospitals will all be on the astral level.
Who can tell? It's a very strange phenomenon, and we must confess that even we have considerable physiological data as to what is happening in the body. In other words, changes in temperature, changes in body voltage, and that kind of thing, to indicate something is taking place, but exactly what it is, we do not know.
But there is a dramatic change in the physiology of the traveler.
Yes, even the blood chemistry, we've been able to pick up some changes in that as a result of one of these, quote, treatments, as it were.
So, but it's necessary to have that encounter with this intelligence on the other side.
It's done externally by that. I mean, by an external source, as far as we can determine. We can only classify it as an external source that does perform this function, and the methodology employed is totally beyond our comprehension.
If that word gets out, you may have a lot of people lining up there at the Institute.
Well, we are not in that business, as it were. This is just a thing that happens within our laboratory facility.
Okay, fascinating stuff, Bob. Paul, you're on.
Hello?
Yeah, Paul, go.
Yes, two things. Many things. I wanted to thank you, Bill, for the show entirely.
Thank you.
I've just been listening for several years, and I appreciate very much having this stuff go on.
Well, I appreciate you you're listening and enjoying.
Well, this is just a wonderful. And also, I wanted to ask Robert if I would be able to get more out-of-body experience from him, or perhaps even from some of the other callers this evening that have had personal things. There might be just something for contact.
Are you speaking of information? Is that what you're looking for?
Well, yes, because I've learned some things about how to remember my dreams better.
Yes.
But I haven't gotten to the out-of-body yet.
Well, in your own out-of-body. Is that what you mean?
Well, yes.
Don't feel like a lone ranger.
Well, as I say, if you take the assumption and...